Welcome to the roundtable for January 16th, 2025. I'll bring the blaze on in just a minute. Little sticks fooling yourself. I thought that was appropriate for today. Especially given everything we're seeing in the media cycle. My God. The amount of stupid is just unparalleled right now. It's just amazing to me how dumb things are. Keeping it real. Real fucking dumb. So I did a interview today on Coffee and a Mic, should be up tonight, with E.M. Burlingame. And, I didn't really, we disagreed on a couple of things. I wouldn't say disagrees, really. We just see it differently. And it was interesting because wicked smart dude. He's got a Substack he writes to all the time, student of history, like most of the guys in the round table. Super smart guy. And what I wanted to tee up today, which is why I asked Mike if he could do it, was I wanted to go through the Sarah Adams stuff and talk through the bigger picture and talk through some of the doctrinal terms, because there's a ton of misinformation floating around, especially when you look at, so I know a lot of you wrapped up the confirmation hearings. That's all theater. That's drama and theater. I think the LA fires have been talked about ad nauseum, and there's part incompetence. There's part, just say, ideology. There's part unpreparedness, which is incompetence. And, you know, we may never know the truth about if those fires started intentionally or whatever, but if they blame it on illegals and they go down that route, then it plays into what Burlingame was talking about today, which is race war, right? So we've talked about the elite always have multiple lines of operation. So they couldn't get the communist card to work. So now they're on to the race war side of it and the disenfranchising white males, especially white European males. They're disenfranchising. And I don't know if you're in the job market, not in the job market, but if you're, and even though you've heard that companies are scrapping DEI, it doesn't mean everybody is. And there's still a lot of companies that are invested in heavily in that. So if you're a white male and you're trying to find work, I can tell you that it's going to be extremely frustrating and extremely hard to find work because they've architected the system not in your favor. So there's going to be a number of, well, let's just say you're going to go through a barrage of applications, et cetera, before you finally get to somebody who's interested in hiring you. And it may take you 6 to 8 months, where before it might have taken you 3 to 4 months. And on top of that, they've architected a recession. So they, instead of trying to drive the communist stake with the police state, now they're trying to drive, you know, extreme hardship. And just because you think Trump's coming to town doesn't mean everything's going to be okay. It doesn't mean that he's going to be able to step up. In fact, there was a Mike, I can't think of his last name. Hang on. Follow my Twitter. Mike Benz posted something today about the lawfare and the obstacles they're putting in Trump's way for his first 100 days so that he gets to a point of saturation where he can't use enough favors, he can't do enough deals, et cetera, to overcome what Biden's put in place. It's obfuscation because they know that Trump's got an axe to grind, and there's definitively some, let's just say he's got an axe to grind and justice is coming for some of them. And I think it's interesting, the Gateway Pundit yesterday, they posted that the Pelosi's and the Biden's hate each other because of the coup over putting camel toe in front of Joe. So lots of things going on, lots of those loose relationships, as I used to say, as I still say, actually, as I've said before, those loose relationships are starting to fray. So lots to talk about. Gents, thanks for jumping on. Sorry, I'm, My phone's blown up, so sorry. But I guess where we should start tonight, let's talk through what you think the next 3 to 5 days are going to look like. There's all kinds of things swirling around about an attack on Trump, an attack on the inauguration. Let's start there.
Well, I guess I got my mic off, so I'll go first. You know, I'm not sure what to think right now. I mean, I've had all these thoughts, listened to the Jane Doe discussion on Sean Ryan. I'm kind of getting the sense that those kind of things might be down the road more. And that whether Trump is aware of it or not, I think that he may just be part of the plan, possibly independently of whatever plans the globalists have. And I think that the most interesting thing I've heard in the past couple of days, I think that pertains to the next 5 days or whatever, is the statement from, it was a Russian foreign minister guy. It wasn't Lavrov, but they basically made the point that they said that Russians themselves are worried that there's not sufficient security in place for Trump. And that they were indicating, you know, concern for his well-being. I thought that was a pretty big signal to hear that coming from the Russians. Myself.
Yeah, I agree. They don't want to get thrown under the bus should something happen. Also interesting, did you guys see what China and more importantly DJI did? They turned off the geofencing for the drones. So if you want to go fly your drone into a park or other place, wink, wink, that you shouldn't be, like government buildings or ceremonies or whatever, you can now. There's no software to stop you. So right. That's kind of interesting.
It is. But I heard also that the drone manufacturers don't have that geofencing.
That's absolutely true. Well, and it's easy to hack too, or if you build your own, it's not going to be in there. So it's kind of a, why all of a sudden kind of thing, right?
Right. It is a planned coincidence, as I've started calling them, plancidences.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So I tend to think that, knock on wood, this is all noise. I'd be real surprised if something happens. I think that they're looking at the last couple of weeks and then forward the next couple of weeks, I think they've turned the volume up to 11 and more than likely nothing's going to happen. And then, when did 9/11 happen? I mean, nobody really saw it coming, right? I would expect if something crazy goes off, it's going to be probably not at an obvious time for maximum effect. I'd be real surprised if there was a really public attack right now.
I remember 9/11 time frame very well. I was a new airline pilot and they were telling us things about increased security risk for like 6 months before. And I think kind of like what you're saying is like they had the threat out there long enough that people became complacent.
Basically. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And when they kind of like trot out the what ifs too, right? And what I find odd is like there's the Sean Ryan interview that came out around the whole truck bomb thing in
Jane Doe
Trump Tower. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a little too specific for my taste.
Yeah. So, I mean,
so what's how interesting do you think the Trump bomb's going to go? Well, what they're going to do is they're going to take all this fertilizer. They're going to drive out to the side of the building. Secret Service is going to turn the other way, and they're going to blow everybody up. Not that I infiltrated the network or anything, but yeah, that's how I see it happening. That's the indications I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there was the comment in the show before that he was talking about at the very like the last couple minutes of the show, he's like, yeah, I'm really worried about schools. People need to be watching schools. I'm like, well, that's interesting. I mean, if you know anything about what happened to Russia after they left Afghanistan, they had the Beslan shootings or terrorist attack. And basically, yeah. Right. You had a cell of questionable identity go into a Russian school and systematically execute everybody until the Spetsnaz went in and killed everybody that hadn't been executed. There's a book about
it. That's called collateral damage. Yeah.
Yeah, well, or cleaning up loose ends. It kind of depends on who you ask about that. But yeah. Historically, it's like we keep replaying the same old thing here. That's kind of what I'm getting at is, that happened to the Russians. And then you have some prominent former CIA people that are like, man, I'm really worried about schools. It's like, that doesn't sound good. But they're at the same time, they're trotting out the hey, we've got rocket propelled grenades. We've got man pads coming across the border. They're trying to shoot Trump's plane down. They're targeting various officials. And yeah, we just happened to stop them. And it's like, well, okay. We've been talking about that in the intel community for years, like the last 20 years. And so it's like the same old thing. They're just dusting it off again. But what's interesting is a lot of that stuff never really made it into the limelight when I was talking about it. And so I'm curious now seeing it pop up in semi-official forms and the public gets a hold of it and freaks out. And it's like, okay, well, to the point on the 9/11 thing, like they were talking about airline security. They were talking about training. They were talking about terrorists. And then you just kind of put it all together one day. Right. So, there's definitely some patterns that repeat again.
I could tell some stories about that time frame, but it'd take too much time right now.
It just goes to show that they'll continue to observe and orient, waiting for the opportune moment when the public's least expects it and is most asleep. And that's usually when we're wrapped up in, some other controversy or some other drama that's either in the mainstream or in, what do you call it? I can't think of it. But yeah, they hit an opportune time. And Surf and I saw that Sean Plankey is up for CISA. You have to kiss the ring. I didn't do that, so my heart's broken. I guess I should act really upset that I'm not being considered for CISA. So anyway.
Yeah, you're really missing out there. Have you noticed with all of these nominees, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I have great hope that a lot of these people are legit. But you know what I haven't heard is I haven't heard anybody come in saying we're going to basically set up to shut the organization down. Like, I'm here to shutter this thing. We're turning off funding. I'm going to fire everybody. Nobody's saying any of that. And that's unfortunate.
You mean in relationship to the claims that they're funding Al-Qaeda and everything?
Well, just in, the Hegseth nomination, right? He comes in and there's this big show, which is just all BS. And you get some people that are like, well, he's not qualified. And other people are like, hey, he's super qualified. He's a warrior. He's going to set the ship right. But he doesn't come in and say, the DOD needs to be downsized by at least a third or more because there's all these government employees, contractors, and consultants who happen to be ex-generals and friends of senators and so forth, right? He just comes in and is like, well, we need to get mean and get our military on the right track again. And it's like, well, if you talk to the military guys, like what's wrong outside of the public eye is procurement, can't get weapon systems to save our lives. Contracting, it's like 3/4 of the money disappears and nothing ever gets done. And complain about DEI and stuff. And it's like, well, a lot of these people work for non-government affiliated entities and they're still in the building and they're pushing this stuff. And that's kind of where it comes the loudest. I mean, I don't know.
I've
definitely worked with blue-haired contractors and it's an interesting experience.
Well, I know that one of the things that both JFK has said, Kash Patel said, and Hegseth has alluded to, which I think he will do once he gets, because, Pam Bondi went into Congress and lit that place with a blowtorch. Will you investigate the January 6th crimes? Senator, I'm going to investigate crimes. get a lawyer, motherfucker, because yes, I'm going to investigate you. I'm going to climb up your ass with a microscope. I'm going to send you to Gitmo. But first, Rin Tin Tin's going to chew on you a little bit. Your head's going to be fucking slammed against the roof on the way into the squad car. And then I'm taking you to Gitmo. But yes, I'm going to investigate crimes. I mean, they tried every concatenation to say, like my favorite was Adam Schiff saying, are you going to investigate Liz Cheney? She all but said, absolutely I am. I'm going to break it off in her ass. Of course I'm going to investigate her. What the fuck is wrong with you? She's a traitor. But she didn't say that. She just stuck with, I'm going to, you know, depoliticize. But they've already said they're going to get rid of non-affiliated, non-authorized personnel and all of the, you know, public-private partnerships that have been established between all the different federal agencies. Where the fight's going to happen is with federal employees. It's going to boil down to, is Congress going to back the president and pass a law to where they can't, you know, unionize and, you know, not fire people? And I think that's where the fight's going to be, as well as undoing some of the laws that have been done, like the CARES Act and a few others. That's going to be the real tell. If you get people to throw those out, we'll see. That'll be the tell if they're actually serious or not. But I think the reality is he can't go in there with a blowtorch and say, I'm going to light the whole fucking place on fire, even though that's exactly what he has to do. Like he has to throw, I mean, literally go office to office and throw people out. And then he has to get rid of all the consultants. Then he needs to get rid of all the fucking lobbyist groups. And that's a tall task because, you know, you look at what Rumsfeld did with his sticky notes. You know, he took a blowtorch to the Pentagon in a lot of ways, but he also created some of the problems we're dealing with now. So the short answer that he needs to do is walk in there and tell all defense contractors, you need to figure out how to produce weapons at a third of what you're charging now, or you're out of here, and create because he said it, competition, right? He's gonna solicit competition from anybody who's willing to make arms. So we should see something interesting out of that. Now, how long will it take? Probably 18 to 20, 24 months to get started. That's half the term.
Yep.
So he may be able to just get fuck all done in, you know, 24 months. But
go ahead. The reason I mentioned that is because looking at what kind of didn't happen with us going to war with Russia, and hopefully that doesn't change. But you know, it's like we're looking for a distraction somewhere. And so far nobody's bought off on it, right? And so if I had to guess, and this is just gonna be my wag, but you look at us building bases and moving into Syria, and you know, all we need is a good terrorist attack or a Beirut style bombing somewhere. And then we can go right back to what we were doing here a few years ago and send everybody over to the Middle East. And hey, we got to pass those budgets and fund those contractors because we got terrorists to hunt. Then that would absolutely run the clock out on Trump and everybody else. And Hegseth would be, along with a lot of other people, hamstrung because public opinion is going to be like, oh my gosh, you know, America, we got to defend America. Look over here. Don't worry about the actual problems. So that's what I'm kind of getting at.
Yeah. I don't know how much this is where the, you know, Burlingame and I departed opinions today is I don't know how much will there is for the Americans to fight even with an attack. Because one, most of the public doesn't trust anything that comes out of the mainstream. They definitely don't trust anything that comes out of the CIA or the FBI. So I'd be hard pressed to see Americans going, yeah, let's go back to fucking war again for another 20 years. Because that worked out so well, you know, displacing the Taliban to replace it with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. I don't see that working this time.
From fighting the Taliban and funding them on the back end to just not fighting them and funding them on the front end. Yeah.
I just don't see the public signing up for that.
Well, I don't either. I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to work out for them, but they keep replaying the same stuff over and over again. I mean, I haven't seen much that's new, right? And so that's the way I'm looking at it is okay, well, they're probably going to try the same playbook somewhere in the last, you know, 50 years or so that's been done, and they're just going to trot out something new and assume that people are going to go with it. And I think, to your point, the public's trust has significantly eroded over the last few years, and so I don't think it's going to work out for them. But I mean, what else are they going to do? They got to try something. I don't think they're going to go away.
I've got an idea that my thought that I've been pondering goes in a slightly different vector from you guys. I think what the, just for the audience sake, the concept of what you guys were discussing was they stage events, false flags that lead us into another war in the Middle East or wherever. And the thing I feel like that they've teed up now, you know, if you put together everything that Bracken's been saying, Jan's been saying, all of us have been saying, you know, the massive amounts of illegal immigrant military age males. And like Jan has pointed out, he's seen, you know, Chinese special ops and other people coming across the border. It seems to me, and Steve, you talked about this, it's like, you don't make this kind of operational move, deployment of people somewhere, not to use them for a purpose. And I'm actually thinking that perhaps the real goal is not, or just the, here's the thing to think about anyway, is what if the real goal is not to get us in another war? Like that's certainly a plausible scenario that we all think is possible. But what if the scenario is actually, the goal is to cause massive chaos here? And the reason I say that is, so if they let, if let's say they decided to allow Trump to come in, and Trump's independent of this, he's doing his thing, trying to fix our country. And he's going to go to try to do the deportation plan. And then they start to unleash the October 7th style attacks. The scenario I could see developing, I could see several different pathways. One, obviously, for a war overseas somewhere, like with Iran. But the other one that I see developing would be, you would have a situation set up where the American people react, and we've just gotten attacked with massive amounts of attacks, as described by Sarah Adams in the Jane Doe interview. I mean, Sean Ryan and her talked about it. I just listened yesterday. They were saying upwards of potential scenarios where we see 50 to 70,000 U.S. casualties. Now, just imagine if that happened, the tone in our country. And I think that would immediately turn very rapidly, or could turn very rapidly, into what Bracken has talked about when he said the music stops in one of his short stories, where suddenly traditional Americans, everybody starts looking at anybody that looks like a foreigner, anybody looks like an illegal immigrant, and starts going after them. And
that's a race war. That's a race war. That's
exactly,
that's the line of operation.
Yes.
To create the race war to create the Nazi Party. That's exactly what they did prior to World War II,
or, right,
you know, in the 20s. And look,
well,
the thing that's missing in this scenario is extreme hardship, right? Because what happened after World War I? Germany went into, you know, a massive depression, and then came out of it through a bunch of public works, etc. But it created the Nazi Party. And
possibly,
you know, Burlingame was saying that the Nazi Party didn't just exist in Germany. It was in all over.
Yeah. Right.
And so the whole point of the race war is to create the Nazi Party, because they couldn't get the Communist Party. They couldn't everybody get it by goose step into the Communist Party. So now they want to get a race war going so they can get people goose step into the Nazi Party. Remember, at the end of the day, this is all about getting people scared, compliant, to walk into the system of control that they want, which is ultimately is slavery, right?
That's what they want.
Burlingame said it a little bit different today. He said, you know, you reinvigorate an economy when you've run out of resources and run out of fiat by instilling slavery. Because how did the Germans, you know, reinvigorate their economy? They used slaves, and they killed, you know, thousands of people in work camps, etc. to reinvigorate their economy. And if you look at the bigger picture, you're right. It's the exact same script. The only difference is the script now has technology to keep you fenced in basically a wireless prison. And, you know, then they want to be able to enforce the chips and everything else. Look, at the end of the day, it's not going to work because, right. You know, the very fucking people that want to do all the genocide and everything else, they can't agree amongst each other. And when one faction or another, or one side or another feels like they've got the upper hand, then they start fighting, which is what we're seeing right now. Or if they feel like they're losing, they start fighting. The whole system, even the German system, was so fucking paranoid that anybody that rose through the ranks was immediately attacked because there was so much paranoia. And that's how that system fails anyway. So regardless of how successful they might get to be, I don't think they're going to be totally successful because they can't keep the coalitions together long enough to coalesce power and then agree who should be in power, which is the quintessential problem of the whole thing, right? But they can do a lot of damage. I think the whole thing with the attacks is messaging, not just for us, but messaging to you know, Trump's group and everybody else that, hey, look, if you go after anybody for January 6th and on, because it leads all the way back to MI6, all the January 6th stuff, all the election stuff leads out of the country. So they have a vested interest to make sure that it stays in country, which is why this whole narrative around China's behind it, that's bullshit. China's not behind it. There's a mountain of traitors right in Washington, D.C. that didn't like Trump in the first place, that were hell-bent to keep him out of office. The Chinese may have helped, but it wasn't masterminded by them. It was masterminded by the Europeans, e.g. the City of London. And they don't want it to go back to the City of London. Why do you think they're going after all the rape gangs in the UK right now to create the race war? But the reality is the child problem, or the abuse and torture and murder of children in the UK goes all the way to the fucking crown.
Well, could I just tie up my last point I was going to make with that idea is I agree with you. I don't think the race war narrative will work. You know, where we live, we have a pretty diverse area where lots of Hispanic people live, and they're pretty well integrated with the local community. And I don't think it would get traction. What would get traction, I mean, I've already seen it in our area. If you talk to the, you know, Hispanic people that live by us that have been there a long time, they are very resentful of, for example, of the illegal alien Venezuelans they've moved into some of the towns not far away. So, and they totally know who those people are. So I agree. I don't think that would work. I don't think it would succeed. I think most Americans would see through it. But I do think, though, that one of their bottom line goals, if you're looking at it from the view of the Zionist globalists, is they just need to get the United States taken down to where China becomes a preeminent power. And all they need to do that is foment grid collapse and chaos and have us descend into chaos for a few years. And that might be their bottom goal. That's where I was going. I think that that's a more likely possibility than the idea that we're all going to somehow rally and go like invade Iran or something like that.
I think you touched on something interesting though. So, I mean, if you look at Adolf, he was not a German, right? He's Austrian, I think, if I remember correctly. And so, you know, to your point, Colonel Johnson, if you're thinking globally and about a like global, it doesn't, you know, have to be branded Nazi, but look at all these, you know, essentially white European countries that have serious problems with, you know, rape and murder and other things going on right now. Like, play that out a couple of years. I could absolutely see a, you know, mega type movement globally to get immigrants out and restore, you know, your indigenous culture, or whatever you want to put on it.
Sure.
But within the Nazi party, I mean, it, the way history is taught, people think, oh, well, that was a Adolf Hitler thing. He grew it organically and it was his baby. But there was plenty of infighting and maneuvering and things as they came to power and it became successful and turned into a war machine. So, I mean, I don't think that that's far-fetched at all.
Oh, I agree. I'm not really arguing about that possibility.
I guess what I'm saying is you take a step back from the American perspective and look at it globally. I mean, we could absolutely see somebody else come to lead the party that's not an American and get everybody on board. That would be interesting.
Well, I think there's a couple of different parts to that. So I think that if you look at what's going on in Ireland, building the camps, you know, that to me is that's preparation for genocide. And then if you look at the way that they're messaging right now, they're messaging to create some kind of a civil strife across Europe, right? But the Achilles heel there is the birth rates are so low in those countries that they don't, you know, you lose people during the race war, you lose people during the, you know, a world war, and it takes you back to the same place. They can't get rid of the illegals. They don't have the population growth that they want, right? So I think there's a lot of lines of operation at play here, more than just that. But I think it all comes back to resetting the currency. They need a reason to reset the currency. And if they've got everybody fighting against each other, then guess what? And I don't think that China, the preeminence of China, I don't think that's the end state they want. I think that's just more ruse. I think it's a ruse for the Chinese and a ruse for us. Because the reality is China is a net importer. They don't have any fucking resources. They have to import everything. And eventually that's going to get old. And plus it doesn't fit the mercantile model. So China to me is just cheap labor while it's convenient. But the thing you hear Trump talking about right now, which is very, very important to the U.S., is repatriating all of the production capabilities, including pharmaceuticals, back into this country. I mean, Mike did interviewed with Martin Armstrong, and Martin Armstrong literally just this week went into Congress and said, you need to get rid of the IRS and get rid of income tax because it'll stimulate investment. It'll bring home all the production capability and it'll stimulate the economy and it will bring back resource to shelf production, which we don't have in this country. And I know that's where Trump's head's at because he's been talking about that very thing is, and he did it in his first term. He did a bunch of tax cuts to reinvigorate people reinvesting in the U.S. and bringing production back to the U.S. as well as energy, because he knows that energy is the other thing that he needs to bring back here. And that's where I see Trump trying to go. But like I said, I don't see, we started this conversation talking about when do we see or do we see an attack happening by Monday? I don't think so. Yeah, it's opportunistic. Yeah, it would take out Trump, but that would create a bigger problem for them. And that would be 175 million pissed off Americans. And I think that's a bigger problem for them, even with the foreigners here. That's a bigger problem for them than having Trump in office.
Right.
Call me crazy.
I agree.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if something if something does happen, it's certainly not a controlled measure because I don't see anything good coming out of that as far as, you know, maintaining any kind of control and driving things in a controlled manner. So I could see that going off the rails, but I'd be, again, very surprised if something actually happens.
Yeah, I think that we're looking at stuff more down the road. I mean, even in the Sarah Adams podcast, and I guess the Jane Doe one didn't get into it so much that way, but it sounded like it was more, you know, possibly 6 months to a year. It might be a little while before any of this stuff materializes, if ever. And one, a different avenue might be to consider, like you mentioned Steve, is the economic side. You know, this whole move towards cryptocurrency reserves that Trump's pushing is all related to the dollar and trying to shore up the finances of the dollar. And Martin Armstrong today was really interesting with Coffee and Mike, you know, talking about that subject somewhat. Another guy that I think is interesting to listen to, and he's out on a daily basis, is Greg Mannarino on YouTube. He makes some good points that he ties into all the economic situation. And I think that that's probably a bigger driver than we sometimes consider here, because we're all military focused.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't have the, you know, we don't have Longo on here to talk the financial side of it. But that said, one thing I have noticed, actually, I've noticed two things now. One thing I have noticed is that they're just flooded the system with garbage. There's so much garbage information out there. In fact, case in point was today, somebody sent me the stuff from Stephen Greer. He's been posting in 48 hours, we're going to have this massive disclosure. Disclosure's coming. Okay, whatever, dude. We got it. You've been around for 20 years talking about UFOs. The Rockefellers have paid your check. Got it. But the last 10 people you brought out were all full of shit. So just go back to the little kids table. We'll tell you to come out with the UFO shit. But for now, just stop talking. We've seen a lot of that. I'm seeing a lot of stuff around not just the immigrant stuff, but the economic stuff. And I'm seeing all this weird stuff around, you know, they're tainting the water supply. They're dropping bacteria into the fog. And I'm seeing all kinds of just weird shit, right? It's just nonsense. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to money in the economy and debt, right? They have to write off the debt. So I've been trying to, you know, and I've been doing Substack stuff almost every day. And I've been trying to tell people, stop worrying about the what. Just be ready for the what, whatever it is. Because if it's chem, biological, or it's nuclear, there's not a hell of a lot you could do about that. You either deal with it or you die. That's it. Those are your choices. So why worry about the what? Just focus on being prepared, being vigilant, stay situationally aware, and live your life, right? But there's so much fear out there, which is exactly what they want. Disorient people to the point where all they do is worry about the bigger picture. Like my problem with the Jane Doe interview is that one, she's way too specific about things. Like this guy's alive, this guy's alive, this guy's alive. Nobody's watching this guy. This guy was dead, but now he's alive. Why do I fucking care? What does it have to do with what these guys are going to do? If the whack jobs are still in Afghanistan, great. But if they're coming here, what are they going to do? They could have concatenated that 4-hour interview down to 15 minutes. Could have walked in like fucking Ross Perot. Okay, here's the deal. We spend $42 million a year for Doha. Another $60 million goes right to Taliban in Afghanistan. They sent 1,000 crazies over here. And I know the number because I've infiltrated. And they're going to split up into 100-man teams. They're going to take 10 cities and they're going to blow them up. But they're only going to do it if Trump goes after January 6th people. Like, how fucking hard is that to say? For fuck's sake. Yeah, we really got to talk about, you know, so-and-so is boffing so-and-so over here. And they came back over here and married into this. I don't care who they fucking marry into. I don't care. Dave, I know you and Raul will resonate with what I'm about to say to you. But if my S2 walked in and went to that much detail, 5 minutes in, I would have put 9 rounds in her chest and 8 rounds in her head just to be sure. Because she didn't tell me anything in that 5 minutes about the disposition of the array of the enemy, right? And it took Sean Ryan to prompt her about the money before she was even talking about the money. Don't you think that would be important if you were like super secret, stealthy, high-speed, low-drag, Mach 2 row, seeking targets of opportunity with impunity, infiltrator into the fucking network? You would know where the money's at. For fuck's sake. Sorry. That whole thing just gets under my skin.
Steve, you're right. She's too specific about the wrong things. And by the way, greetings to everybody. If I have too much ambient noise behind me, let me know and I'll get off. I'm driving in some bad conditions. But and I didn't see the second interview with that CIA chick, but I watched the first one twice. And anything she says, I think, is just pre-programmed messaging. And it's got a purpose. But you're right. Operationally, it's not specific enough to help us, but it's too specific about the wrong things. That's how I look at it.
Raul, I know you got an opinion on this. Did you get your mic working?
Yeah, I got my white mic is working, if you can hear me.
Yeah.
It's my screen. My screen is black. So I have no control over the controls.
That is awesome. NSA has completely taken over your computer.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, assholes.
That is fantastic.
That's a place I'd like to send these. the infamous 1,000 terrorists embedded in the United States. Okay, I have a list. I can give you the list. We know who you know, who you have to go after, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's,
you know, the problem with all this stuff is that it is definitively noise designed to keep everybody so freaking mentally busy and scared. The fear porn is bad, as usual. I mean, that it tells us that there's this huge psyops going on. And at this point, because it's so chaotic, right, what is the one thing that you could do, right, to totally disrupt an operation? It's chaos. The more chaos I can create, the more people spin in circles because, we didn't train for that. Oh, we weren't prepared for that. Oh, we weren't thinking about that. And they hit you from 360 degrees, and most people think flat, right? They got north and south and east and west. And we're just getting bombarded. And it's intentional.
Right. Well, what I think it is it's like it's creating a smoke screen so that when they really do carry out whatever they want to do, nobody reacts because they're all just so confused about what's happening.
No, I agree. Well, I agree. Because if you look at, you know, and there's a huge difference between North Carolina and California. Huge difference. And it's a difference between what people do and how people react. And as horrible and horrifying as the North Carolina stuff was, people picked themselves up and they took care of each other and they were able to survive. And they're still doing it. Right? The government still hasn't helped. Which I think is a crime in itself. The California thing, what is it? Everybody's running around hair on fire, and the DEI, you know, Kristen chicks are you know, pointing fingers at each other.
Right.
They don't know how to deal with this at all.
Right.
And they're all within miles of each other. It's like, give me a break, right? Whereas North Carolina, they're separated by terrain and distance and all kinds of things. And so when you look at the difference between the two worlds and you look at the difference between the two ways that the people reacted, right, you can see that on the left coast, right, that these people cannot handle this. Whereas the absolute, you know, disaster that occurred in North Carolina, they're just dealing with it. Like, right. Okay, right? And we can, by looking at those two, all of us, and I include everybody that's listening and everybody that's paying attention, you can learn a lot from these two environments to see what in the world's going on and what you should be doing, right? Because, yes, in the middle of this smokescreen, something is going to occur. The question is, and we've talked about this over and over again, are you ready? I can tell you my family and my close friends are ready. And One of the things that I have not done, and I keep saying I will, but there's a long story that goes with this, and that is to close the loop with my sheriff. He was vicious. What I'll say is that he was viciously attacked by the lefties because he's a constitutionalist. And they pulled the show me the man, I'll show you the crime game. And after 8 months, they couldn't come up with a single thing. And that dropped the case because they had nothing. There was nothing to show the court. And the court said, you got to do something or we're just going to drop this. It's like, okay, well, I guess we're dropping it. But now that that's happened and he's back on his feet and he's back doing things, I need to close the loop with him because there's a lot of things that we've been talking about that I need to make sure that, number one, he's tuned in, which I believe he is. But also, I have some tricks up my sleeve that I can take to him. And one of the things that I'm also going to propose is that we start building a network of, you guys have all been there, right? And that is you build an alert roster. You say, okay, here's the first set of names on the alert roster. Call them. We need them. They're going up north. There's another set of names on the alert roster. Call them, deputize them, send them to the west, right? And show him how we can quickly mobilize our county, immaterial of what problem he's got. And that's my next step.
Starting to sound like a well-regulated militia there. That's kind of crazy.
Oh, can't be saying that. NSA might be listening.
Yeah, they're listening.
Through my computer.
They're listening.
But it's not militia, right? It is what we have always been. It is in our freaking American DNA. It is who we are. It's who we were. It's what got us to where we are. And my personal goal is to take us back, even if it's just a small portion of us. And everybody around where I am, they all know, because I am a living history guy, Rev War type, one each. And they all know I talk this stuff all the time. It's like, have you read this? Have you read that? And I point them to Federalist articles, and I point them to Anti-Federalist articles. And I point them to things that they can read on their own that are not overly demanding. Because, you know, you don't want to point them to, this is a perfect example. I don't know if you guys have seen Sean McKeon's new book called Stalin's War. It's only 827 pages. But I want to point them to, you know, a little pamphlet or a single article out of the Federalist Papers that says, hey, go read that. Okay. Let's sit down over coffee on Saturday and let's talk about it. And you work at one thing at a time so that people start to understand more of who they are, who we are, what our DNA is, and stop listening to the media. That's always my first point to them is you got to get off TV. Turn it off. Right? Open up your brain. Start thinking. Start observing. And that's the other thing I've been telling everybody. Look around all the time. You know, you got to put your head on a swivel. You got to start thinking like you're out on patrol and you're looking and sniffing and listening to everything. And when you see something that's odd, you got to bring it up. You got to let people know. And that's, you know, I see a bunch of people in an area that there shouldn't be any people here. What are they here for, right? I see a Connex that is out of place, in a bizarre place. Why is it there? And start questioning things. You know, it's essentially to get people out of the zombie mode and get into the living mode and pay attention. The other thing that we've been fighting here is to get people to understand that you have a voice. Use it. Do not let, you know, the city council or the county committee or anybody sit and operate on their own. Make sure you have people in the room. Make sure you have many people in the room. The more people you can get in that room, and sometimes all you got to do is fill every seat. You fill every seat in whatever room that they're using, I can guarantee you they're going to start sweating because they have no idea why you're there. And why is the room filled? What is going on? This is how you start taking back as the people. And it's local, right? And we keep talking about that too. You got to start local.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And that's what they're really afraid of. I mean, Troop's not on here, but I was involved in AZ politics a little as well. And he always hits on it, right? You get local, get involved in your community in some aspect and start showing up to the meetings. And that's something that the national powers that be are really afraid of, as people that are engaged and that don't care about the propaganda pipeline, that are actually engaged in their communities and that are showing up, because you show up and the elected officials are the ones that get really nervous. You're absolutely right. That's 100% true.
Rob,
I think it's.
Oh, sorry.
Nope. Go ahead.
I was going to just piggyback on a couple of things Rawl said. Is that I feel like, going back to the chaos smokescreen idea, that where all this predictive programming coming from the Sean Ryan show and everything could lead is that their plan could be to have something like these large scale attacks occur. And then the deep state plan within that could be to use that massive chaos that occurs in order to stage kind of a purge or a night of the long knives kind of thing like the Nazis did. And so one thing I think for patriots and all of us to be thinking about is when, besides just trying to maintain order where you are, you know, be looking for the threat, like Rawl said, you know, being head on a swivel, because I could see such a situation being utilized by them as a perfect way to go purge out all their opponents. Like, for example, they have these attacks happen, they do something to Trump, and in that window of total chaos and uncertainty where nobody knows what's going on, they go target all the conservative opposition, you know, that the major opposition. And the thing that fits into the paradigm for me is, anybody who's watched the Monkey Work show, for I don't watch it every time, but I've watched him every so often, he's constantly talked in the past couple of years about these survey flights that have gone on, and there's been thousands and thousands of these survey flights. And it's like, what are they surveying? It's obviously, and he says they're surveying for a future battlefield scenario, and it fits into that kind of paradigm of some type of purge. I don't know, I'm just thinking paranoid here, but I think we got to think deeper than just it's chaos to get us to go to another war.
Well, they always have 2 to 3 lines of operation, right? So assume there's 2 to 3 lines of operation, and assume it's tomorrow. It's going to happen tomorrow.
I heard that.
I heard you come off mute.
No, you know, it's kind of interesting, and I don't know if anybody addressed this. A couple of days ago, I don't get on Twitter a whole lot, but I saw mention where somebody somebody was commenting that they had gone to an Antifa meeting or organizational get together of some kind. And they were talking about not just how well organized, but the fact that they had their own gun club, their own training. They weren't a bunch of douchebags. They were very disciplined. Seemed to know what they were doing. and you know, not what we usually think of when we think of Antifa members. And I thought that's an interesting piece of intelligence right there, because if they've got serious folks for fighting back, that adds a different dynamic to the situation in certain respects. And if you think about it, it would be smart on their part, because they've got to realize, compared to most of the right, you know, a lot of us are very familiar with firearms and relatively speaking, very well trained. So it's a natural course of action for them to try and step up and improve their own, I guess you'd say, kinetic capacity. But at the same time, I wanted to add a comment. When I was in Ramadi, one of the things we noticed with the locals was, and with the insurgent groups, was when there was new organizations that came in, there was always sort of a settling in period where people would kind of just observe and get a feel for the situation. I think with the new Trump administration, you're probably going to see a little bit of that. They're probably waiting to see, all right, who gets confirmed, who doesn't, exactly how aggressive is Trump going to be. Steve, you and I have talked about this. I think we both agree that somebody at some point has probably held a gun to Trump's family, Trump's head, and essentially said, all right, you're going to be able to do this, this, and that, but here's the line, and if you step over it, there's going to be life-threatening consequences. So I don't expect anything major happening immediately. I think there's going to be a feeling out of the situation. For our sake, I hope Trump lands with both feet right on everybody's head and gets extremely aggressive right out of the gate. But I don't expect that to happen either. I'm just hoping he keeps them more than occupied, because I'm sure they've got plans to, you know, talk about chaos, derail as much of his plans as possible.
But, and I think it was brought up earlier, and it has to constantly be re-said, that they are, it's the infamous they, we can go into that if we really want to, they want to create so much diversity and so many lines of effort that Trump needs to deal with, that his first 100 days become worthless. And what he's got to do, and we can only hope for, I didn't get a call. Steve, did you get a call to come join him?
Yeah.
I don't think you did either.
He's got to have... No, I have to kiss the ring. I have to kiss
well,
the ring.
Well, you know, it's a fact that, you know, he's allowed to nominate 4,000 people. And I talked about this last time, about the fact that, you know, you've got all of the different departments under the executive branch. Department of State, Department of Agriculture, Department of Commerce, Department of Transportation. He gets to nominate people that goes in all those places. Does he have that entire list ready to go? And that entire list has to have, he's got to have meetings with every single one of those senior leaders saying, no matter what is going on, you have a line of effort that you must attack. And do not let anything take you off that path. And I don't, you know, I've heard stories of Trump where they say that, you know, the most recent meeting is what he thinks. And so if 2 months ago we met with him and we talked about what we talk about, and then this morning he meets with John, or let's stick with Jane Doe. And Jane Doe says, hey, here's this and this and this. And he dumps our theory and our line of effort and immediately goes with hers. And the stories that I keep hearing is that he does this a lot. And so we really, it's chaos. We have no idea what the hell he's going to do. We have no idea if he is truly setting these things in motion. and I mentioned this last time, I'm tracking his agenda 47 items, and there's 20 big bullet points, but then there's a whole bunch of other things that he's promised to do. The question is does he have his force ready to go for that afternoon to just start knocking the pins down in 50 different directions so that they can't stop it? What we have to do is we have to create chaos in their camp. We have to create confusion in their ranks. We have to create a way for all of that has been done to us over the last 4 years in terms of negative energy and despair and fear, and all has to be reflected back in an aggressive manner. And Steve, I understand you want, we all want to watch the perp walks, and we want to watch everybody end up getting flown to Gitmo. That's, I do not believe that's going to happen. As much as we put him in place to do that, I do not believe that's going to happen. And I believe that that's because there are too many black hats in the organization that can't be touched. No matter how bad they were, can't be touched. I'll leave it at that.
So I want to circle back as the analyst here and tell you, Steve, that, you know, it's really important to understand the fabric of the underwear of the terrorists that we're worried about, because, you know, we want to know when they get upset. It's critical. So on the Antifa thing, there was some talk about them on the Radio Contra podcast a while ago. And there's been a few other things that have cropped up here or there in the news. And the short part of that is they are actually well funded, and they have been well funded since the Summer of Love. And they have been equipped and trained, and they have been trained by leaving the country and fighting on the battlefields of Libya and Syria, and participating in ISIS and other operations. And that is absolutely vetted. So these guys came back with legitimate combat experience, and a lot of them have more recent experience than a lot of the veterans that are on these podcasts talking. So they know how to use drones as weapons. They are versed in creating and employing IEDs, and they are successful because they've come back alive in urban combat. So they should be very much taken seriously. And I would say, if for no other reason, that the State Department allowed them to go and allowed them to come back, and nobody's gone and rolled them up. So that kind of tells you something there.
Yep. And so we're, they know how to use jammers too.
Oh yeah, they absolutely do. And we're 4 days away before they become active here. So, you know, give or take. So I think we're going to absolutely see some things happen with that. So that's a serious issue. But it's not just Antifa. I mean, Trendyagua is a problem as well, right? Sinaloa is operating. I think when you started the question of like, what do we see in the near future? Probably nothing associated with the inauguration. However, you know, border's been open for a long time, and whatever people or logistics that needed to be put in place, I would assume are in place. So that goes back to paying attention and being prepared. And if you live in a smaller community, you know, like let's say small town of less than a couple hundred thousand people, I would recommend getting on your neighborhood Reddit board. There's one for just about every little town out there, and start paying attention to that. You can get the neighbors or neighborhood app or whatever. You know, there's the Facebook groups or whatnot. But it would behoove you to create some accounts in those places and just start paying attention to what people are talking about. Because I know in the area that I live, you know, we're in a more rural red part of the country. And, the local Bubbas are talking about just weird criminal activity, and I'm probably not going to go into too much of it for OPSEC reasons, but stuff that shouldn't have been happening, and stuff that is out of the norm as far as the type of people that are associated, the tactics, techniques, and procedures that they're using. And you know, you collect a little bit of that information, and you can absolutely show up to your city council meetings or whatever local government stuff and start asking questions, or call up your sheriff and be like, hey, you know, I was on this Reddit board and people are talking about some guy hanging out in the Walmart parking lot over the last 3 weeks and this and that. Like, what can you tell me about that? I'm a concerned citizen. And it doesn't mean they're going to actually, you know, give you any useful information, but you're letting them know that you know, so that they know that you're watching them. Right. And so that's also a good way to start organizing with other people, is start showing up to those meetings and talking to people. Because, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat or whatever, you can start talking to people and like, hey, I'm worried about my safety. I'm worried about people breaking into my car. I'm worried about my kids or grandkids walking to school. I'm worried about security at the school, you know, and start the conversation. And you can, to Ralph's point, get the people engaged and start working on lists of, you know, if something happens, well, how are we going to respond to it? So that's a good way to start getting the ball rolling, is first start asking the questions.
Yeah, I think it's true that if you get people to show up, they get nervous, because even the corrupt BOS here, they get nervous when the room is full of people and they don't know what the topic is. And seen that several times. I want to transition, because we've got about 15 minutes left. I want to transition and talk about what you think the next 12 months is going to look like. With, I'm assuming Trump's going to come into office on Monday, no other big issues. What do you think the next year is going to look like?
I think I already mentioned some of the things that I think it's going to look like. I firmly believe that the first 100 days is going to be a very rocky road, unless all of these meetings down at Mar-a-Lago have been setting up the force structure for execution. I don't mean execution as in shooting people. I mean execution from a military perspective, that we're, you know, you're getting ready to hit SP at 1300 hours on the 20th. And that's my biggest concern, because what we're going to watch is we're going to watch a shit show for 100 days while everything churns. And then during that, the American people are going to be manipulated to be angry at freaking everything, so that then they can be manipulated to move to the next step. And I think it was brought up earlier about the digital currency. I am pretty darn sure that we're going to get shafted that way. That's going to come down, because our, no matter what we try and do financially, we cannot fix what has been created. I think it was Matt Bracken who was telling in his latest Coffee and a Mic, was explaining that in the last 2 months, the current administration has spent more money than they have in the entire rest of the year. So they are just, they are drunken sailors driving us into the earth as far as they can, so we can't get out. And if we can't get out, then what do we do? We head towards Jubilee. If we head towards Jubilee, that means we're going to shut everything down and start over. If we're going to shut everything down and start over, the best way and easiest way and fastest way to do this is with digital currency. Which, okay, great. Now everybody gets to start over, but we are all now under constant fiscal surveillance, and now we can be even better controlled. I know that's very pessimistic, But that's what I see over the next year. Over.
Nobody wants to take a stab at this one?
I'll go ahead. I've got a couple comments. First, I think on the left, this is really, for them, this is really about delaying tactics. I think a lot of what has been said already about confusion, chaos, things like that, disruption, obviously those things are going to take place. But I think for them, the first major objective is getting to that two-year point where they can switch out at midterm elections and basically change the seats of power into Congress. And if they can make it to that without Trump dismantling too much stuff, they'll consider that a win, because maybe even if they're back on their heels a bit, as long as the apparatus that they've built over the last 50 years hasn't really been disassembled, they could always plug in new people, you know, in a whack-a-mole style of Manning strength. That's not a big deal. They don't care about individuals. But, what we have to see is how many of the people Trump nominates are going to get through, how many people are going to be willing to do what's necessary and take the risk. You know, Raul makes a good point. Trump met with at Mar-a-Lago with a lot of people. We all pray to God that it's going to be worthwhile. I'm of the opinion that there's going to be a lot of window dressing and things that Trump beats on his chest about. But by the same token, I don't think they're going to let him get away with nearly what he would like to. I think they'll make him pay a price, his family or himself personally. He steps over too many lines. So things like these hostages, I was just going to finish, things like these hostages being released in the Middle East or anything like that, they're okay with that. They'll let him look good on the small scale. But as I do think that the whole Bitcoin thing that he committed to investing in, I think that is about him moving us away from the Fed and towards a system that the City of London bankers don't control. You can talk about Bitcoin in different ways, but everything has some degree of manipulation. And I'd rather it be something like Bitcoin than the Fed anyhow.
Dave, do you think that they have already gotten to him? And I bring this up because can I talk about this? Yeah, I think I can. So in 2014, when Zelensky was first brought into office, the Black Hats entered the office and surrounded him and said, yeah, all of your great election promises were interesting, but now that you're here, we're under your control, or you are under our control, and if you look out the window here, there's a tree. We will hang your ass on that tree if you do not do what you're told. And oh, by the way, we will hang your family first. You will watch them, and then we will hang the noose around you. Question is, have they gotten to Trump in the same manner? That's my concern.
I think they've already had that conversation. You know, I think Steve, I remember a year ago, Steve talking about the example of Mark Meadows or somebody sitting down with him when Trump had the idea of starting his own political party, and they pretty much cut his legs out from under him. So I think there have certainly been discussions, and they'll keep the reins on him pretty tight in any way possible. The question is going to be, what is Trump willing to do? What's he willing to risk? Is he willing to put himself and his family at risk? I think he'd put himself at risk, but by the same token, how much support he has, and only he knows this, how much support he has from special ops community, from the Marshal Service, from different people in law enforcement. What could he expect in terms of actual support? What's his targeting process? How many people have worked on this for him? That's I mean, the technical aspects of this are too much to get into in a short what remains of this discussion. Maybe it's something we should talk about in the future, but that's going to be the bottom line. What is Trump willing to do? I think he's already had the gun pointed at his head, and I think he realizes what they're willing to do. We're all holding our breath seeing what he's willing to do. I personally would love to see him go on the offensive and, just establish himself and be proactive. Take out the people who would be taking out him, both politically and otherwise. But we don't know what the ground truth is of that terrain. We know the cartels would be happy to come after him. How much of a war does he want? That's the big question.
Well, willing to mobilize, pull back from the world, mobilize our own border, and get our own defensive capability to actually defend the country instead of defend, other things that really do not impact us and the American people?
I think he's more than willing to do that. The question is he willing to go after people, the quote-unquote powers that be? Because they've got their own henchmen, to include the CIA. How far is he willing to go to dismantle the capabilities of those people?
Yeah.
We all think of how daunting a task that could be, but there have been empires that have come and gone throughout history. We're all human. We all gotta eat, sleep, breathe. We all put our pants on one leg at a time. Is it too much of a fight for him to win? No, I think he could win it if he was smart and used his time at Mar-a-Lago talking to the right people. But we don't know who he talked to.
Yep. I tend to, when I look at his nomination hearings this week, and I look at the rhetoric from the nomination hearings, that was nothing like Kavanaugh, right? So he was definitely in the background working the deals. And it's why I bring up the China narrative, because I don't want to hear that nobody committed treason on January 6th, because that's the farthest thing from the truth. And I don't want to hear that the Chinese were behind all the election fraud. I don't want to hear that either. So I think he was in the background making deals and throwing, realpolitik, right? They're going to throw all these other politicians that are coming to kiss the ring, and a lot of them went down there to kiss the ring. They're going down there to kiss the ring to throw somebody else under the bus. And I'm making the assumption that somebody, two or three of them, have got thrown under the bus for the public trials that they know they can't get away from, that they're going to have to do. And I'm assuming that he's going to come into office and all of his nominees are going to be confirmed. That deal's already done. He was in the background for the last 2 months doing that, and I think that he learned a lot from his first go-round to this. And I think I know that he had his cabinet picked before he even ran, because Kash Patel told me that almost 2 years ago. So all that said, I think we are going to see some action. The question is going to be, what is the action we see? And that's, I think, what most Americans want, right? I'm not paying attention to any of the confirmation hearings in the sense of the rhetoric, because it's all just noise. But I am looking at it from the perspective of the people he picked are going to be confirmed, and this is going to move forward in either way. Now, the question really becomes, if the Sean Ryan stuff and the CIA stuff is a threat to Trump to say, don't go after the deep state, AG, don't go after the agency, et cetera. I think just the fact that disbanding the ATF is on the table means that other agencies will follow. Now, whether it gets through or not, that's not the point. The point of it is that it's on the table now, which means that the public has been saying this for, I don't know, 2-3 years now. It's starting to resonate. So I'm hopeful that when he gets in on Monday, he's going to go right to work. I was hoping that he wouldn't do an inauguration and he would just, do the swearing in and go to work at a secure location, because I don't think anybody gives a shit about the pomp and circumstance. I don't. I don't need to see another fucking parade. I don't need to see him stand up there and give a speech. I don't need to see any of that. I don't care. What I care about is I want him to get to work. I want the people who's working for him to get to work, and I want to start seeing results.
Everyone wants to go to another change of command ceremony.
Yeah.
Those swamp creatures do, though. I mean, that is kind of a signal, right? I mean, you listen to Hannity and some of these people talk about, oh, we're going to the inauguration. It's like, yay! That's just what we want to see.
I think the question out of all of that is, what will Pam Bondi do? She's the biggest question mark in the whole circumstance, as far as I'm concerned. We've seen how the Justice Department has been weaponized and utilized by the left. What's Trump willing to do? What's Pam Bondi willing to do?
Oh, I think she's got a list of people she's going to fire and move out of there right away. She's also going to move out any of the non-affiliated consulting firms as well as political action parties that have been invited in. They're going to go away right away. So she's going to have immediate impact on some of it. Now, where we're going to see the most pushback is going to be when she starts get rid of some of the senior level people, right? The GSs and the SESs. That's where she's going to have the problem, because they're all fucking insurgents as far as I'm concerned. But to answer my own question from a half an hour ago, as we're coming up on time, I think the first 100 days is just going to be a lot of rhetoric. We're not going to see anything. There's going to be things behind the scenes. I think in the first 10 days, he's going to pardon all the January 6 people. He's going to pass Pam Bondi to repeal almost all of those cases. You're going to see Hegseth. He's going to invite all the people that were pushed out of the military 3 years ago to come back. And if they don't, they're at least going to get back pay for being thrown out from the vaccines. He's going to repeal and get rid of DEI. He's going to repeal and get rid of all of the diversity, equity, humma that's been pushed throughout DOD. And then he's going to go after the defense contractors and open up bidding on contracts for specific weapon systems. And I think that's going to happen in the first 100 days. After the first 100 days is when we're going to start to see some of the civil disorder and civil violence by Antifa and some of the other organized groups just to bog Trump down in a political fight. But I don't think that's going to distract him as much as they think it's going to this time around. And then you're going to see the states go after Trump's stated policy to get rid of the illegals. And you're going to see that become a non-issue, but it'll take center stage in the media. The last half of the 12 months, I think he's going to win the court battle to get rid of the SESs, and he's going to start fucking firing SESs wholesale because they all need to go. And I think he knows it. And at the same time, you're going to see HHS, NIH, and NAIAD completely gutted, and you're going to see their powers stripped away from them. Because remember, they've been delegated powers by the FDA. You're going to see the FDA gutted. You're going to see the SEC and the SEC gutted as well. All those political activists. And I think you're right. The Fed is being positioned to do the right thing for the country right now. But when the Fed's no longer useful, it will no longer be around. So they're positioning to replace the Fed with the Treasury. They're positioning to shed the dependency of the, or at least our support of the central banks. So we're going to see a lot of different changes over the next 12 months, just fiscally. The last piece that I think we're going to see is the states going after Trump for deporting illegals on a case-by-case basis to keep it bogged down in court and probably keep Bondi bogged down in court. And I think that will have some measure of success. But by year two, a lot of that stuff will be free, and he's going to be able to do things and pivot. The wild card in all of this is, what is Congress going to do? Is Congress going to get us into a war? Because this is something that EM was talking about today, which I agree with them. Congress is the wild card. And if you look at what Mike Johnson's already been doing, he's been throwing people off of committees that dissent from what he wants. We've seen that before. It's exactly what Pelosi did. So I'm anticipating that there's going to be something that comes out of Congress that derails a lot of this. I would hope that Trump keeps the screws on him, because I don't have any faith that DOGE is going to be able to do anything. I think DOGE is just a show to put a front on Trump's desire to get rid of a lot of federal employees. I do know one thing they're going to do. They're going to furlough as many people as they can and cut their access within the first 100 days. So we should see that in the first 100 days. Do I see an attack in 2025 that they're talking about, Sean Ryan? Potentially. Do I think it's going to be distributed? Absolutely. Do I think it's going to be multi-day like Bill Bupert says? Absolutely. Do I think that it's going to be car bombs or something else? Could be. Hard to say. But we are going to see something this year. And again, because here's the wild card. Millions of Chinese operatives in this country conglomerated around big cities without really an agenda. They're going to come out of the woodwork doing something. I don't see China doing kinetic, but I do see China doing destabilization and influencing operations, if not blackmail. That's what I see. Any other comments or feedback before we wrap this up?
I was listening to you guys talk. I guess I look at it more like what are some key decision points in the next year? Obviously, approaching next week is a key decision point that, depending how things go, it will alter the course of the year or the future dramatically. So if we see a lot of chaos happen around the inauguration or not, that's going to be obviously a major decision point. I think that we're going to see, you know, like you said, the 100 days is going to be basically a decision point that's going to change, you know, how things are going to the future. And I think that it's obvious to me that financially there's massive, you know, key decision points coming, and we're going to see crypto expansion. I think if Trump is able to pursue the crypto reserve he's talking about, like you talked about with the Fed. The other thing I think is that we're going to continue to see the Western world awakening and responding to what's been going on, you know, in terms of the invasion of the West that we've been seeing. And I think that the populist movement against that is going to expand around the world and continue to grow. And there's going to be an inevitable globalist reaction to that. I think we're going to see continued fires, disasters, and chaos. And I think that we should all still be being prepared for whatever type of chaos that we might see unleashed upon us. You know, nobody could have foreseen LA fires here a couple weeks ago. And you could have said the same thing about North Carolina a couple weeks before that happened. So I think that planning for more chaos is smart. And what I believe is that the enemy has some black swans up their sleeve. And anybody's ever read the books or heard of Nassim Taleb, he's a quant guy. He wrote a great book called The Black Swan. And one of the key things he made in that book that resonates with me still is that major changes in economic situations, world events, whatever, they all occur in what are so-called black swans that are either scripted or set up, or they just occur in a way that the vast majority of people are completely surprised and not ready. And so I think we're going to see more black swans in the next year, and that we should be thinking about what are those potential black swans so you can be prepared for them. That's all I got.
Anybody else? Any other comments before we wrap this up?
I can throw in on the decision point thing. One of the things they were looking at years ago was mining basically public media or public reaction via social media to things, right? So essentially on the back end of Facebook or Meta, whatever, Twitter, X, Google, the way people interact with the different inbuilt things is logged. And so as we talk about, you know, deep state or Trump's people, they're all using the same style of analytics to interpret these decision points. And so when something is put out there like digital currency or abolishing the ATF or, you know, whatever these issues are that everybody kind of grabs onto day to day, a lot of that stuff is being generated and put out and propagated by AI. But what they're actually looking for is the interactions with people. And a lot of these data companies, data warehouses have profiles on everybody here listening. And so, you know, they may not have it attached to your name for legal reasons, but they know who you are. And based on what you like or don't like and the circles that you run in, that's interpreted as a positive or negative sentiment and then aggregated and sent back like, okay, the American people like this or they don't like this or they really hate this. And a lot of these organizations that are, you know, government type entities as well as big enterprises make decisions that way at this point. And there's some interesting conversations that could happen about whether or not that makes sense or not, but that's what they're doing. And so to Colonel Johnson's point, I think we may see things sort of abruptly change direction or move in a different manner based on public sentiment or reactions within social media and alternative media. So my comment would be, you know, people do need to pay attention and stay engaged. And when Trump walks off the stage as president, don't just go back to, you know, watching cat videos or whatever you were doing before. You still need to stay engaged because that's going to matter. As well, stay prepared. So that's my comment.
Agree. Okay, we'll wrap this up for tonight. Appreciate you guys jumping on. As always, you can find me on Twitter. I'm not so much on Truth Social as much as I'm on Twitter, mainly because I'm every day I'm testing the guardrails to see, you know, what's going to get people banned. And somebody asked Grok the question, have more people been banned and deplatformed off of Twitter since Elon Musk? And the answer is yes, they have. So keep that in mind too. Well, I don't think we've seen the last of the deplatforming. So, but as always, stay prepared. We'll be back next week. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
You're